Hey guys, welcome to episode 201. Whoop whoop. Ugh. I don't know if I've ever done that before. I certainly won't be doing it again. My boys of summer kicking off officially. Of course, we had the Hutch Harris episode. I hope you guys went and checked out the Thermals new album. But this is our official start to the Boys of Summer. I even waited until after Memorial Day. I felt very adult and professional. I am so excited to get into some gents for the time being. I want to get some shout outs out into the world. I want to thank Kevin for your awesome Boy of Summer recommendation. I want to thank Jennifer and Ryan for your emails, Clay for your recommendation. And then I just wanted to throw out there that Hutch actually recorded himself singing a little bit of Boys of Summer for me because my completist a sickness caused me to be very sort of agonizing over the fact that I didn't have him singing Boys of Summer. So Katie actually went and added that to his episode, as far as I know, and that was Whitley shaking herself. And so you can hear it there and consider that sort of a re-release of the episode. I think that's it, guys. Enjoy the episode, and I will talk to you soon with more Boys of Summer in store.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
What if that was true? What if I just had, revealed to you, this is how we podcast, by the way.
Okay. We're on.
We're on. What if I really only had like dogs for work? Like I get that people in Los Angeles have dogs for fun, but we're a working household. So my dogs till the soil, like they pull a plow
like
or something.
Beasts of burden.
Your like dogs beasts of are burden. Beasts of burden. Yeah.
Pack dogs.
Yeah, but if I needed to ride one of them to the store.
And you have some with just little like saddlebags.
Yeah.
That you can send as messengers.
Oh, yeah.
This God, doesn't sound so great. Bad.
You have
a cat. Know,
you have a cat. Okay, that's. Yeah. I knew you had something.
I'm not.
Is it a work cat?
It is, yeah. It's a work.
Your cat, I think, types up all your school papers.
My cat does most of the things that come out as me product.
Yeah.
That's the big secret. A lot of people don't know.
That's really great. What a great cat.
She's really vocal. She could talk as much as I could.
Is she very vocal?
Too vocal, yeah. Like at the wrong times, at 5:30 in the morning, 4:30 in the morning,
yeah.
Or late at night.
Could you impersonate her meow?
Mm-hmm. She has a vocabulary. I don't know exactly what the things mean.
I'd love complete as many as you can.
Okay, so she's half Maine Coon, so she's very high-pitched. Okay. When you open a can of food, she comes running, but she's kind of heavy, so her mass exerts more air out of than I think she intends. So her meows go in rhythm with her steps. It goes, and it ends on an up note. It goes... That's the first one.
God, that's really good. I didn't know that I was asking you to do something you're clearly very skilled at.
Well, I've had a lot of time talking with her. If she's sleeping and you give her a little pet...
Yeah.
And then there are the horrible ones when she's like, we're sleeping or a door is shut. If there's ever, Amanda and I are ever separated in the house and she can't keep both of us in her eye line, meaning like I don't know which one to bother for food, she freaks out. Uh-huh. So she's just like, meow, 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 meow. It's like that horrible mating story, uh-huh. But a little higher pitched.
Yeah.
And then, when Amanda picks her up, she'll do something that sounds so much like a no. She'll go, nah. You'll see, probably.
Oh, that's so satisfying.
Yeah.
One of my dogs is a husky, and they do that thing, which I didn't know that she did until maybe a full year after she came to live with me. I was going to say I rescued her, but that really... It's tough, man. That's a tough statement because certainly someone rescued her. I did not pull her off the street, nor did I pull her out of a burning building or like a sinking ship.
Like someone briefly fostered her after the rescue and then you took her?
Yeah.
That's
So she's a rescue.
That's how Margo is.
Dogs
our cat.
And cats
Same
are.
Thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be. I feel like that should be the assumption now, rather than like it should be the exception that you're like, when I paid $5,000 for my full bred, you know, so and then like cue angry
yeah.
letters.
Yeah.
But we all still kind of want to throw out there because part of that has to do with, I guess, the sort of like what the origin story of your dog is or your cat is. If you don't know it and their behavior may have something to do with that, then there's this sort of like it gives you the chance to kind of explain that or go, well, listen, I don't know. She was five when I got her. It's a mystery. But she is like she never did it. And then about a year in, she started doing this husky thing that you see all the time on YouTube. I'm not even on YouTube, but people send me videos of huskies because they know I have one, and they're very talkative. Like she never barks, never barks at anything. But when she wants to go on a walk or when she's hungry, she does this like sort of weird, like it's this like a very guttural talking. And so people will put videos of their huskies on YouTube because it sounds like they're saying like I love you, like it's very Scooby-Doo.
That's enough to make me a dog person.
Yeah, she's ridiculous.
I do huskies shed?
Oh god, Gorley, I vacuumed.
Oh, you've done a wonderful
2 days
job.
Ago, and all over the see all those fluffs
oh,
already.
I do, yeah.
2 days ago, I vacuumed.
Well, then I guess I
yeah, it's tough. Does your cat shed?
No, she doesn't. But she pulls hair off her. She's grooming herself all the time, so there'll be little clumps. Like, but there's not that thing where it's just a soft blanket of downy.
That's
fur.
Pretty much what this is.
Amanda does this thing most every night called furminating.
Oh yeah. Oh, I've got a furminator. Yeah, I don't know what it's doing that's different. Is it like there's some promise of it like getting down to some under hidden layer
of
hair?
That's what it says. That's what it says. But she pulls mounds of the softest, like it's as soft as Angora or something. And I feel like
she's
we should be making sweaters out of this.
I know. I have two. There is a, I think for comedic effect, we haven't done anything with it yet, but there's like a two buckets of fur packed tight in from a 30-minute session of furminating with Whitley.
We should start marketing pillows
oh
stuffed
God,
with our
it's
pet's fur.
Out of control. There, I do have that that moment frequently, especially for some reason with two dogs. It's so much more comedic to me than one dog. And I've talked about this before on the podcast, but about like twice a month, suddenly I'll just be sitting on the couch watching television, and the dogs are. Like last night, they were like borderline the crazy demon dogs in Ghostbusters. Uh-huh. Like they were both sort of mirroring each other, at, you know, as the gateway to the television. And I just had that moment that comes to me, you know, on a regular basis. It's like, this is absurd.
Yeah.
Who are these creatures?
I know.
They're not human beings.
I think about that with our cat, that the only thing stopping her from murdering us is size. It's in her nature to kill. She's a predator.
Yeah.
She doesn't love us. She depends on us for food. So we have that relationship.
Right.
But, you know, Amanda read this thing that freaked her out once, that if you were to die and be left alone with your pet, dogs will wait like a week or 10 days before they eat you. But cats, basically, you got a day at the most, and they're eating your face.
So
and so
crazy.
She has this, she was somehow told this. And so she has this fear that when Margo comes up to us when we're sleeping, that Margo's,
she might mistake you for
well, death. She's checking for our breath to see if we're still alive.
That's a whole thing. The whole cat's breath, cat stealing a baby's breath. I don't know. I saw a movie from the 80s that involved
familiar.
A cat leaning into a baby sleeping, and you sort of see the cat.
What movie was that?
It
wasn't
the
Legacy, was it? Do you remember that movie, Legacy?
This movie was called Cat's Eye.
Oh, is that a Stephen King?
Might have
joint?
Been.
I don't know.
It definitely is. It was one of those anthology movies like Tales from the Dark Side or The Twilight Zone. Which, by the way, there's a description. When I first started on Twitter, I was like, what do people do on this? Which now has been many years. But at the time, it felt like everyone had been on Twitter forever, which was kind of true. And so I just got into a habit of tweeting just images of like DirecTV's descriptions of movies. Because sometimes they're so weird and bad, like what they choose to say.
Uh-huh.
And that one was one of my favorites because it felt like they were so pressed for time and space. That they were like, because it was The Twilight Zone, the movie, you know, which is kind of maybe a long title, and that's why.
Yeah.
But all it said was like, I can't remember each and every one, but it was like, four stories, trickster, oldsters, man on a plane, da-da-da. And that was it. That's all it said. Oldsters.
Girl with no mouth. Yeah, man loses head.
Yeah. Oldsters.
Oh, my God.
Oldsters. The real highlight.
Youngsters and oldsters.
Youngsters and oldsters. God. Apparently, oldsters is a thing, which I only found out from those descriptions. But, yeah, those horror anthology movie, or the sort of, yeah, I guess they were horror, that came out, I feel like, right around the same time, where where that was like a thing that was okay. That's not a thing that we really see much anymore.
There's
right?
a new version of it, like stories. A to Z of horror, whatever that's called. And
is it on the Chiller Network?
No, these were like released, theatrical released.
Oh, really?
And they short were horror anthologies.
Oh, I didn't know.
There's
this.
Another one too. Oh, what is it? I can't remember.
A to Z makes it sound like they're providing 26
I think
short
so.
Films.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, but there's one that I think is less, like four found footage films or something like that.
A
within
through
one.
D.
Yeah.
They found one. Footage. Interesting. Yeah. Do you like horror movies?
I have a tenuous relationship with horror movies. I do like them, but I had a bad fright when I was a kid for a horror movie, and so Amanda loves them, so I like the experience of watching them, but I do get legitimately...
Yeah.
I hate jump scares.
I mean,
and
how could I not
films.
Ask you what your
I just was,
terror was?
My babysitter made me watch Halloween with the lights off when I was about, I don't know, four or five or six or something.
That's really scary.
And that house is now near where we live. It's in South Pasadena, but we live in Pasadena, but it's very close to South Pasadena. I get my hair cut across the street from the Michael Myers house, so I'm always just getting my hair cut. Looking over at the house. It's weird. It's been moved down the block and renovated. So it's kind of
brightly
colored.
Oh, wow. They picked it up and moved it?
Yeah. And it's kind of has like a glossy, brightly colored Victorian look. So it's like a Disneyland Main Street house now. But just knowing that's where young Michael Myers killed his sister.
Sure.
Yeah.
It is. But do you feel... But listen, we joke. We have a good time. We have fun. But do you feel a legitimate sort of creepy feeling about it? Is it that
movie.
That ingrained? But that house.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know, obviously, that it was not... Like, that's not even... Yeah. That's not even a movie that was based on anything, was
no,
it?
No. It was like the first real slasher, popular slasher movie.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so it was before my age of critical thinking, so I'm still left with this like visceral feeling of fear from it. In fact, I'd say that movie probably is what gave me my critical thinking, because I had to like find a way to understand that wasn't real.
Yeah. The two for me are Poltergeist, for sure. I saw way too young.
Yeah.
And not just way too young, but at someone's house that I had never been to before. I'm sure I've talked about this on the podcast before, but my mom dropped me off at some woman who just like was part of the Mormon church. So it becomes this kind of, I mean, maybe she had a relationship with this woman.
Yeah.
I certainly didn't. It was like, my mom had to go out of town. It's all so nebulous. Like she had to, for some reason, go out of town. I guess my dad couldn't take me. She dropped me off at this strange person's apartment, and this person had a daughter who was older than me, and the daughter kept me up the whole night, like feeding me sugar and stuff. In the middle of the night, we got up and like they had cable, and she put Poltergeist on, and I watched it just wired at like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I was, you know, it was whenever Poltergeist first came out, probably on, I don't remember how old that movie is, but it was definitely like, it's on. So it's, and I never would have been allowed to watch. I mean, it's very little. And I was traumatized.
The scariest part about that for me, I think, is having to watch that at a place you didn't feel comfortable.
I didn't know it. I already was like crazy homesick and weirded out. And then I watched that on top of that. And then the other thing for me was A Nightmare on Elm Street. I didn't know when the first one came out, I was really little. The concept of it, hearing about the concept of it, was so terrifying to me that I started having nightmares about this movie that I had never seen. So it was my worst fear. My worst fear was this movie I had never seen, because every time I went to sleep, I was like, oh, for sure, I'm going to die in my sleep.
Oh, God.
And so I turned it into such a huge thing of fear that when I finally saw the movie years later, I was like, oh, this is charming.
Yeah.
Because nothing is as scary as, particularly not that.
I did that with Halloween, because I also, when it was happening, when we were watching it, I was so afraid that I didn't want to watch it, but the rest of the house was dark. My sister was there too, and they were watching it. So I would sit in the doorway. So I actually heard a lot of the movie. I didn't see it. And so I did the same thing. I didn't watch it for years, but I had recurring nightmares and all of these things that I had made up about the movie that didn't exist. Yeah. Oh, God. I once had to stay at a friend's house for the night. I mean, it was under the guise of like come sleep over at my house. We're buddies. But I didn't know him that well, and I didn't know his family. And there was nothing bad that happened, but it was just different than the way my family works. So I was left with this weird feeling like they bought me a Battlestar Galactica action figure, which was great.
Yeah.
But then when they put us to bed, both of his parents, and again, like this sounds kind of creepy, but it wasn't. They meant well. Were just so sweet that they tucked me in and both kissed me on the forehead and were trying to make me feel so comfortable that I was just like, oh, that's so, it was so strange. And like, I want to say that the other boy, that their son, was already asleep. And so I was just kind of like, I don't need this kind of special
attention.
Is this
where I live now? I know. Did these people kidnap me and make me their son?
Have you always been my mom? Yeah.
Where was this? Where did this, where did these people kidnap you?
This was in my neighborhood in East Whittier. I grew up in Whittier, mm-hmm. near the Whitwood Mall, mm-hmm. Nixon Land, where he grew up, kind of. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like as suburban.
Wow, shout out to that mall. That was said as though I would know what it was.
No one would. It's gone now. And now it's like a big outdoor, you know, complex with Target and all that stuff. But it was an enclosed mall. Because I lived a block away from the Woodward Mall.
That's very convenient for a young person.
It was, and they had two toy stores. Ooh. That one was called Vicky's Toy Town, which was this run by these angry old people that hated kids.
Sure.
And the best toys were in the back, where it ironically got darker as you went. And so it was like, it took courage to go look at the best toys.
Yeah.
And they always thought you were stealing things.
Yeah.
But I would walk up there every day. It was a block away. I would go by myself and just walk around the mall. I think because sometimes, like, I'm not really teaching anymore, but when I did, I would get to wherever campus I was teaching, and I would be early because of traffic. So I would just go walk around a mall near the school.
Wait, was the second toy shop owned by, was it like the opposite? Was it?
It was more of a.
I don't know what that would be. It was owned by children. They would give their toys away.
Just elves in the off season. They had to get work. It was kind of a more anonymous toy store, but like sloppy, and I don't think the owners worked there, so it was just like teenage employees. And,
yep.
But somehow Vicky's Toy Town got the best stuff, and they were so expensive. They were way more expensive than anywhere else, but I didn't live near a Toys R Us, so I had to get my mom to drive me somewhere to get something at Toys R Us. But I would go in there, and they had this like glass display case of metal cap guns and handcuffs and things like that.
My.
And I would just sit there and covet this stuff. And,
yeah, no kidding.
And they would just watch. Oh, it was an old man. I say
was
old.
Was any part of it collectibles? Was that like, could that have been part of it?
Those kind of things
where it is, where you sort of start walking this tightrope where they do like hobby stuff and
not
toys.
Exactly. No, it was pretty much
toys.
Like manufactured
toys. I'm so curious.
Toys.
I wish we could find these people.
I do too. In
that's
fact,
like such
I've
an interesting
asked about
sort
this.
Of, yeah.
Vicky's Toy Town is, I'm sure it was only one place. It wasn't a franchise. And it was always one older man. And I always thought he was old, but he was probably 50s or 60s.
Yeah.
And two older gray-haired women. And I never knew if one of them was Vicky, who Vicky was.
Yeah.
But the man seemed to run things. And I don't know if he was named after a daughter. And so it disappeared long before the mall ever did. And I've only met a couple people that remember this place, but it's like the formative place, like my Joseph Campbell's myth place,
where I accept
the challenge to walk far back into the
it
store.
Gets darker,
yeah, and that's where
really
all like,
easy
the bikes
to picture.
Were, and yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, God.
And so you had the also. How far is Whittier away from Anaheim? And that kind of.
Well, it's about 20 minutes from Anaheim. It's about 40 minutes from here.
Okay,
so just east. It's right on the edge of LA County. So it goes Whittier, and then La Habra, and then you're in Orange County.
And brothers and sisters?
I had an older sister, and then later my mom remarried, and I had two younger brothers, half brothers. But I grew up with all of them, so they're like, you know, full siblings to me.
Were you? How old were you when your half brothers were born?
I was 12.
Okay,
junior high, and then my mom wasn't married, but she and her boyfriend got pregnant, and she was in her mid 40s.
Oh wow!
Yeah, when she had both of them.
Oh wow!
Yeah,
that's something. I mean, that must have been like the rarest thing in the world.
I know.
Was that weird for you when you were in junior high to be like, I'm gonna
be a brother? Yeah, I had no real precedent, so I just thought, you know, all right, you know, what can I? There's nothing I can do about it.
Yeah.
And then my stepdad was 11 years younger than my mom too.
Oh, I love this. This is very racy.
I know, and then my brothers came along, and they're just fantastic. I adore them, you know. And
are they? But they're not twins.
No, but they're Irish twins.
Okay.
Yeah.
She found someone great. When did your parents split up?
When I was 7.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. And it was all very amicable, and my dad just moved about 5 minutes away so that we could see him, I don't know, a couple times a week and stuff. And so, and yeah, they never like had a court battle. In fact, I look back at my dad and I think, wow, if I ever get divorced, that's the way to do it.
I know. It's funny when it's funny when something that is traumatic on some level that you still look at it as setting a good example for whatever that tragedy or trauma might be.
It's crazy.
God, I really hope I handle death the same way my blank did. You're like, oh, all right. Well, that's grim, but yeah, it makes sense.
He, you know, like taking whatever the factors were of their divorce out, you know, and I think there were on both sides, they probably had reasons for...
Well, maybe that's part of it, right?
Yeah.
Is when both people have some ideas. Because my parents were the same way. When they split, I think they were both really broken up about it. Like, they knew it had come to that. But neither one of them was like, it's all so-and-so's fault.
Yeah.
I just shook my fist like an old man who runs Vicky Toys in my... Please. In case anyone's wondering what I did.
He's got to be dead.
You, if you hadn't divorced me.
All three of those people have got to be dead.
And who were, and what was the relationship one to the other?
Three
creepy siblings. Was he married to both of them?
I have no idea.
Maybe they were just carefully guarding their marriage secret, and they just were worried every time someone walked into the store that
they
were
like
out.
Fundamentalist Mormons that were married to each other. But then I'm also worried that I'm doing the Halloween thing where I've contrived some of these things in the intervening years where... Probably some of this isn't true. I've made some of it up.
I think a podcast about like essentially childhood and teenage years. And I have said so much on this podcast, I am waiting for someone I grew up with to go,
what?
You know, you're wrong about like 10 things. And it makes me feel really uncomfortable.
But can they be trusted? Because we're all doing it.
Yeah, that's true. Mm. Whose memory is more right?
I know.
That's all subjective, I guess.
I've even looked at Vicky's Toy Town up online and I've only found like a... I think
you're
it was like a
Vicky's
what would
Toy Town closed in the '50s.
If you ever
where
went
was I going?
There was some message board. I won't even say it was about the Whitwood Mall where people was like, "Oh, I remember Vicky's Toy Town,"
so
but
amazing.
Nobody had any.
The internet
facts,
houses
you know?
Everything.
I know, and I went when this mall was closing down, like probably 10 or 15 years ago. They were going to raise it to the ground. I thought, oh, I better go back there because I have such nostalgia for this place.
Sure.
And I remember. It was originally an open air mall and then they closed it in the late 70s and then they did this grand reopening and they did this thing where two skydivers landed in the parking lot. And so I was there and I went to the management office 10 or 15 years ago when it closed down and they had big framed photos of that event. And I saw myself as a little kid where the little skydiver guy was coming down and it was incredible. And I was, you know, I should have asked somehow if I could.
You were
get
in
that.
The pictures,
yeah,
what you're saying.
Yeah, because I was
so
there.
Cool.
Little bullheaded kid.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I saw Boba Fett and Darth Vader. They did a Empire Strikes Back promotional thing where they just walked through JCPenney and Darth Vader was like 5 feet tall.
That's,
but they had like the professional costume.
Now I could be totally wrong about this, so you have to tell me and maybe you won't know because it was just your reality. But
yeah.
With your perspective now, to me, what this sounds like is, like, I'm from Tucson, Arizona.
Yeah.
That's a city. It's not a small city. I feel like it was like 700,000 people then. But it's also a city that for some reason seems to not get that much bigger. All
uh-huh.
the kind of surrounding areas grow, right? But the kind of population of the
yeah.
city seems similar. But we wouldn't have had something that quote-unquote sophisticated. So what my brain is trying to do right now is to go, okay, this is a city, this is a mall that was just close enough to the Los Angeles,
yeah.
you know, kind of like showbiz world that it wanted to have whatever its version of that was. Like it was important to have some version of it, but it was just podunk enough that it would be like the 5 foot Darth Vader.
It
does that ring true for
yeah,
you or
I think
am
it
I
does.
Okay.
Because it's funny, growing up in Whittier, there was no sense of the entertainment industry there whatsoever.
Yeah.
Just
does
nobody
it still feel like that?
Yeah. Nobody, because it's just far enough where it's not feasible to work
yeah.
there. It's 40, 45 minutes away. So it was kind of all or nothing. And it's just as suburban as you can be, 50s tract homes,
mm-hmm.
middle class. It's so solidly middle class. You're probably right. It probably has that feel of like, we understand a little of that language, so let's make some of it happen, but we're not
yeah.
going to go all the way in.
Yeah. And Disneyland is like sort of, you know, then you sort of have the amusement park, like
yeah.
child extravaganza.
That's right.
Imaginative, you know, kind of that world down there too. What was your high school like? Did
it
go to public school?
Yeah, I did. And I I went to a richer high school just because I was in that district. So I was living below what's called below Whittier Boulevard, which is really middle class. Mm-hmm. And then above Whittier Boulevard is this place called Friendly Hills.
Oh, my That's God. Kinda, come on.
I know. And it's pretty upper class.
Friendly Hills. That makes me sick to my stomach. Yeah. It's great.
And my dad moved up there my junior year of high school, I think. But I lived at my mom's. And then I went to this really wealthy high school that was in the hills. And it was like pine and fir trees. It was a beautiful school. And it was an open campus when I went there. I think it's fenced off now. But then they had this group of Hispanic students to enrich the whole campus. But they didn't speak English, and their name for them was Expanded Horizons, is what they called everybody. And so it was this kind of mixed high school, which is great. And I ended up becoming friends with a lot of them, especially because our only classes that would cross over were PE. And they would first, I think, because it was me and this guy named Freedom Fisher were the only white kids in our PE class, and because everybody else played sports.
Yeah.
You didn't have to do PE.
Oh, okay.
If you didn't play sports, and I didn't play sports. So it was me and this really skatery guy named Freedom Fisher.
Freedom Fisher.
And the rest were these Spanish-speaking students. And at first, they would kind of make fun of us. And I knew they were cursing at us, so I would just repeat the curse words back to them. And we became such good friends, but we only spoke in Spanish curse words. Like, hey, chute madre, pichijoto. And then we would high five and hug. And by the end, we were just fast friends. I miss those guys.
So these kids that were ESL, because I went to a school too where there were a bunch of ESL kids and a bunch of SSL kids, Spanish second language, and we would have classes together and then certain class, and then at a certain point every week, you would go off to, and be taught only, like for me, I would be taught only in Spanish for a certain part of the day.
Oh, we never
and
had
then
that.
The Hispanic kids would be taught only in English for a certain part of the day, so we'd be learning those languages.
I took German, so I was so far away from that.
Yeah, but like, I guess, but now that I think about, this is the most ignorant thing I can possibly say, but I'm curious, like for me, the elementary school kids, that sort of made sense to me that, and the school was in Abadio and it was like, you know, Tucson is very close to the border, but the idea of this sort of, you know, upper class public high school in Whittier having a bunch of Hispanic kids who didn't speak English, I'm curious, like, where they came from? Where did they go to school up till that point?
I'm not entirely
sure.
What's
the story?
That's a good question. Whittier is really a big, long city, and it's not really near any freeways. So West Whittier is a little bit more working class, I guess. And they must have come from there, I would think. But it was funny because they all dressed nicer than us, but different culturally. So we were all dressed very casually, as you do in high school, and they would be wearing like loafers, nice jeans, and nice members only jackets.
Mm.
They like some of them would wear like blazers and stuff like that, and they put much more attention to their appearance, and it was like very nice. But then they had like separate homecomings and prom queens.
Oh,
and
wow.
Kings.
So it really was almost like two separate schools.
Yeah, when I look back on it, it's very segregated and strange. We didn't, PE was the only crossover and that was it. And there was even, I think there was like class president and then Expanded Horizons class president. So it really was separate. That's strange.
Uh-huh.
I don't think you would have that at all today.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
I can't think of an example of that now because everything is like a charter school where it's really integrated or it doesn't exist at all.
Yeah.
It seems like that's the kind of the purpose of it.
Yeah. Oh man.
But when you knew that they were cursing at you and stuff, you rather than be intimidated and just like be quiet, were you a little sassafras when you were a teenager?
I was tiny in high school. So I was about 5 feet when I started high school. And then that for most of it. And then my senior year, I grew close to a foot my senior year.
Did you have actual growing pains?
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I feel like I still do sometimes. but I think it was my instinct to never, like to play the fool, to play the clown. Because I was class clown for better or for worse. And I'm sure it's for worse in junior high. And so I was just ready to do that. And I think they were probably disarmed by that. There was no confrontation. I just embraced it. And then I would say it back to them, but I would not in a mean way.
Right.
And they were first
as
laughing
at me.
As if
you didn't
sure.
know that they were cursing at you, you would be friendly as if like, I think they're trying to talk to me and say hi, sort
yeah,
of joke.
I would.
As
exactly.
if it was, yeah, I get
and
that.
I would
it's
say
easy
it back.
To picture.
And for sure they were laughing at me at first, but then over time, I think they realized, oh, he knows what right. we're saying to him, even if he doesn't know the literal meaning of every curse word.
Yeah.
And then it became this like shorthand language we have where I would call them that and they would call me that. And then we would, I think, I want to say my name was Pinchy. Like, that's the name they would call me. And I would call them Joto back.
Something like that.
And they're just these like well-dressed Hispanic students. It was hilarious. And then by the end, we were all playing football together.
Oh, great. Yeah? When you had your growth spurt? Or were you playing when you were a little...
No, I mean, just in PE.
Oh, in PE. God knows, I wasn't. Did you ever play sports? Even
I played soccer when I was younger, yeah, for quite a while.
But not in high school or in...
No, freshman or sophomore year, I went out for soccer, but it was all the Hispanic students and the coach didn't even speak English. So I never got to play. I just sat on the bench the whole time.
Oh, you were in, but just sitting and watching.
Yeah. And I want to say that's because we had a language barrier, but I look back at it now, but I bet I wasn't so good. That wasn't a
all
racial thing.
All 5 feet of
that
you, was, come on. Uh-huh. Soccer doesn't work well. I guess it's good if you have long legs and you can run fast.
I was great when I was young. I used to play club soccer and all-star soccer and all that stuff. But I could imagine in high school, by the time I got to high school, I was nowhere near what the rest of the players were.
Yeah.
Yeah, probably. And I probably knew I didn't want to be there. I think I was just doing it thinking, oh, I'm supposed to play a sport. My sister did. My friends do. In fact, I even remember being on like organization soccer when I was a kid and playing club soccer. And then I got this call once where the coach said, all right, we're up. We want you for the next season. You're in, right? And I went, wait, it's my choice?
Yeah.
And I asked my mom, it's my choice? And they're like, yeah. And I went, okay, no thanks. And that's it. And then I never played another sport.
It's funny how much of that we just assume... I mean, I've talked to people on the podcast who I feel like I just recently talked to someone, it might have been like Tawny Newsom or Eliza or someone, but all these like people who are super smart in high school who, I shouldn't say all of these, but certainly recently there was someone who was like, yeah, you know, I graduated a year early because I was able to take all these AP courses. And so by the time I was, you know, 16, I was getting ready to graduate. And what I remember commenting on that podcast was I just had no sense of that kind of choice when I was that age. I just wasn't thinking that way. I wasn't like, what are my options for graduating year early or anything like that. It was sort of, this is my job.
Yeah.
I show up and go to this job every day.
It's
funny. Whatever rules I can break within that parameter, but never like to the extreme of, oh, I can control X, Y, and Z of this.
I never knew that. In fact, I was, God, I can't express how middle class I was because even in my education, it was like, oh, don't take the remedial classes, but don't take the college.
The
honors classes, you take college prep. Like you will, us Gorleys, we're always straight down the middle. And even then I wanted to go. My two best friends both went to USC, one because he was pretty wealthy and one because he could get financial aid because he was not wealthy at all. And we were so middle class that I couldn't get into USC. So I only applied to Cal State Long Beach. I went to Cal State Long Beach. I got my master's and my bachelor's there. It was so just go to a state school. And I never questioned it for a second until I think I got out of college and I went, wait, I guess I could have taken honors classes. But being honest, in high school, I don't think I would have been ready for them.
Taking on all
this
kind of...
I was too much of a like... try to get away with the least amount of work possible.
You were.
Yeah.
What were your enthusiasms, if not schoolwork and PE?
Definitely theater and art and, all of, visual design and all that stuff and playing and just goofing off. And I had this youthful, like, carpe diem extrovert thing going on that I have not had in years. I don't consider myself an extrovert in any way, especially, like, personally. It's easy to be on a podcast or do a show and talk about all this stuff, but off stage or off mic, I'm relatively shy, and I guess I was not that way as a kid for some reason. I think I got all of that carpe dieming out of my system, so much so that to me, like, seizing the day is just, oh, I can sit on the couch and relax.
Oh, yeah. I know. I get that big time. What did you have a group of friends who were sort of, were you like... No, I'm picturing some sort of Stand By Me situation where you find a body on the tracks, but
I think we wanted that. I had a few different friend groups throughout the years, and we were always out doing stupid things. I mean, just the same old stupid things everybody does, but yeah, I mean, we were out there.
I want you to give examples that are far beyond anything that anyone would consider normal.
I'm trying to think of something in college, especially. I'm sure we would have done something.
Were you like pranking kind of probably stuff? Like gentle pranks?
Gentle pranks, yeah. Well, I would run a craps table out of my dorm room for a little while.
Sure.
I built a little craps
table. Look, you're a bookie. Is that a thing?
But I don't think I even knew how to really play craps. I just knew how to build like a felt craps table. And that was more exciting to me. And the thought of having a function in my dorm room that was slightly out of the rules, you know, sounded good to me. But I think we'd play blackjack. I know we knew all how to play blackjack, but yeah, I think the basics of craps were there, but that was
it. I don't think I've ever played craps.
Yeah, I'm not sure I have either.
I think I've decided against it just based on aim alone.
Fair enough. It's supposed to be the one standards with the best odds.
It is supposed to be better than blackjack?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
What is that? You roll dice? I guess that's what I've seen. I guess I've seen so many fictitious craps games in like James Bond movies at all that I imagine that what you do is walk up, someone has like a thing where they take a stick and put chips on something and then you take two dice and you blow on them.
Yeah, that's right. You have a hot lady do that. Yeah.
And then you roll them.
Natalie Wood's sister will do it.
Yeah.
And she's in Bond doing it. Yeah. I think you can make it as simple as easy as you want. You can roll the dice and there's a few rules as to what you roll, but you can also play other people's roles. You know, you can bet on them.
Right,
that's why there's always a big crowd because people are often betting on the current role.
Yeah.
Shooter, I guess.
Whoever's hot.
New shooter hot. Coming out.
Was that something that came along with this idea of that sort of going away to school? Because you were living in a dorm, as you said.
Yeah.
That sort of going away to school where you suddenly feel like maybe you're a grown up, but you aren't, but it feels the most like that you've ever felt. To me, that seems like gambling, which was not something that ever even entered into my world in any kind of a way until much later, I guess. And of course, now I'm a gambling addict. No, I've just never really taken to it. But that to me seems like a thing that would be one of the first things that a young person would be like, guess what, guys? Right. We're grown-ups. We can gamble.
That's probably right. In fact, I remember in high school, three of us drove to Las Vegas. We were 18. And my friend was crazy. He sped the whole way there. I want to say we got there in like 3 hours or something. Drank Jolt Cola. And then I had this run at a blackjack table at a really shitty casino that didn't check my ID. It was my only first time gambling up until that point. I think I did really well at blackjack. I had read a book or something and have never done as well since. And I think I thought, oh, then this is my thing or something. But yeah, I guess. And then we came home at like 7 a.m. the next morning. Mm-hmm. We did it all in less than 24 hours.
God, you really peaked early. I feel so sorry for you.
That's true. That's true in a way. And I was so enamored with this American dream of like living your fantasies. And honestly, Dead Poets Society did a lot for me for that.
Sure.
Like probably in a bad way, because I think it set me up to think, you know, whatever that 50s Leave It to Beaver thing was, I didn't really fully believe in. But then there was this Dead Poets Society of like, you can make your dream come true, which in a way is true, because at the time I was doing all of that strange carpe diem stuff and believing that it was magical in a way.
Yeah.
But you grow out of that, and then the simpler things are what matter, and you don't realize that at the time. And so it served its purpose at the time, but I have none of that left. And almost a sadness that I don't, you know.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Do you, what about girls when you were in high school? If you were a little peon,
a little guy,
was that something that you still were you still dating? I mean, listen, I had friends who were, you know, 5 feet who were just like big man on campus.
Oh, I was none of that. Yeah. I was very, let's see, like, socially, I was very keyed into a lot of different groups and got along and like really had a fun social life. But no, it took a while because it wasn't even like I was down on myself self-confidence wise. I just didn't even think of it as a factor. I just, because so girls were always like, oh God, I love you. You're my little brother. And so I never assumed any girl would be interested. And then when I got a little older, I guess, and it would happen, I still wouldn't. So I would just let things go by me. They had to make the first move because I wasn't being hard to get. I just didn't know.
Yeah.
Then when I got to college, nobody even knew that I was once short.
Yeah.
And then I had some attention from girls. I just like it went right past me. And I was always, you know, like, I don't want this to sound the right way, but I was probably always shooting outside under my weight limit because I just didn't know better, you know? And then it took me a long time
to be like, I've earned this.
Or felt like, yeah, or to even, I've just always been very passive in that sense, not like, I don't know. And then
it was so interesting that dichotomy of being I think very common, but that idea of sort of being the attention seeker or being funny and being doing pranks or like kind of being an extrovert in that way. And that not like the idea that there's just this invisible barrier that's like, that clangs down before whoever you would be interested in, you can reach that place is so interesting.
And I'm sure that whatever sense of humor I developed was purely to attract girls. Like that was, I knew from an early age, like this is the only way I'm going to get attention. I'm not what I consider growing up in this high school and stuff. It very much was like, if you're the quarterback, you get the girl and that sort of thing. But it wasn't like you see in a movie, it wasn't a horrible thing.
The quarterbacks weren't jerks. It was like you're getting stuffed in a garbage or a locker.
No, I had a good time. I just assumed that's what it was, and I think I was wrong. And then I honestly think maybe Amanda was about the first girl that I actively pursued and it took me, I was probably, 38 at the time, to finally go, all right, I think I know how to at least directly approach someone.
Yeah, that's a long time, Matt.
I know.
Hang on just a sec. This is like a really weird thing, to say, and I love you and Amanda, and I would never want to make anyone feel weird, but I'm going to say it anyway, which is that you and I both had relationships that ended around the same time, and
that's
our
right.
mutual friend, I don't know if he said anything to you, but he was like, I want you to date
Chris Holman?
No, it was Acker.
Wait, no, I don't think I
Acker
knew that.
Acker was like, I think you should date Matt Corley.
I can't remember if he approached me. Maybe I have my names mixed up.
It was
oh my God, that's
was,
right. And I was already
was
in a relationship
Acker.
With Amanda.
And you what?
I was already in a relationship with
Amanda?
I didn't know about this.
Oh, yeah. No, this was like we both had pretty freshly broken up because that's the only reason I didn't do anything. I mean, not to say, again, I love Amanda. I'm delighted that you're married.
Yes.
None of that. But that was that was a period of time when I was like, I think I was like, based on what you're telling me and based on my own personal status, I feel like it is way too soon for either of us to be dating
anybody. I may not have even
anybody.
Heard that.
Yeah.
Because I remember something like that after I was already dating Amanda. But that's funny that, no, I don't remember
it's
that.
It's never too
all.
Late. I could marry you both.
That's right.
I could marry you both tomorrow.
We'll reopen
I
Vicky's
think,
Toy
is
Town.
That-
Please. Oh, my God.
It does make a weird kind of circular sense.
Yeah.
Could I see myself living as a weird, like, gray-haired woman owning a toy shop filled with secrets? Possibly.
For my part in this, I could do this.
Yeah.
Reopening that place. I'd have to rebuild the whole mall.
Vicky's
Toy
Shop. Yeah, you can't have it. You have to put it in context.
Yeah. No toy stores exist anymore unless they're like boutique toy stores in Solvang or something. Like,
you know what? That I think is what people respond to so much in, I will say, communities like Los Angeles, which of course is a bunch of micro communities, is that people do, there's this idea that, I don't feel like I'm saying anything new, but I'm going to say it anyway. There's this idea that people who live outside of LA think that, this is a gross overstatement as well, but there's this idea like, oh, if I would never choose to live in LA because people who want to live in LA want to live like this fast city life where you just live in your car and you never talk to another person and all that.
Yeah.
And then when you live here and you've lived here for a little while, you realize that everyone here with few exceptions is exactly like everyone everywhere else. And so a lot of the time people really do seek out those areas and people do become wildly loyal to the pockets that they live in because it feels like a small town.
I think you're right.
On any level. It's like, this is where I get my, you know, groceries. This is where I get my dry cleaning.
Yeah.
This is our little bookstore. And so, when I think of being sort of drawn to a neighborhood like Larchmont or a neighborhood like, whatever that's called on Honolulu Street in the Valley, you know, that's like, not the Valley, but like in Glendale. You know, Honolulu, it's like, there's a little tiny bowling alley. It's like a 3-lane bowling alley.
Oh.
You know what I'm talking
about? Wait, I think so. The one on like Brand Street, that area?
No. This is further north. This is more towards La Cañada.
Oh.
I know it's Honolulu Street, but the pocket is not called Honolulu.
Okay.
It's called something else.
Wow.
I'm sure anybody who lives in this area is angry right now that we don't know what it is.
I should know that.
But it's a really cute, it's very old-timey in its way. There's like, you know, a dress shop that's like Mildred's Dress Shop, and it looks like she's wearing a house coat from the 50s.
Yeah.
But then across the street is a Starbucks and a Color Me Mine. Yeah. You know, yeah. But people gravitate towards that stuff because we do still want to have that neighborhood toy shop. And so
I
there's
agree.
One in Larchmont that I always look at and think,
is
like,
there?
They're doing it. Yeah.
Oh, I should go
like little
that.
Fisher Price toys.
Oh,
and it's
God.
Not like, to me, it doesn't come off in any way as a, you know, there are some areas in Los Angeles that do feel like the kind of upper white class version of like, we've got our own small town
yeah.
and these toys are all $700 a piece.
Yeah.
This one legitimately seems like it's just like, here's these Legos and, you know, here's these little like generic Legos that,
do you ever
you know,
go to Montrose? Do you know?
That's what I'm talking
about. Oh, that's
about.
What you're talking about. Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Montrose.
Okay, yeah.
Montrose is Honolulu
yeah.
Street.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Yeah,
okay.
yeah, yeah. That's then exactly,
I know exactly
what I'm talking,
what you're talking
about.
About. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. That's why I think Amanda and I moved out of LA County slightly. Just I think we both grew up in this just slightly detached neighborhood near, she grew up in Long Beach near,
I would reference like, the
LA
Amanda Lund
all,
episode for
what's
those
that?
Of you. I,
well, oh, that's right. Yeah.
Podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you can,
that's
yeah.
Right. I think that's what it is. We both have this familiarity that we need to check back in with every once
absolutely.
In a while with the suburbs or something. It's weird because suburbs is a bad word to a lot of people. And
right.
I even check myself a little bit before I say it, but then I think, no, wait, I can't, like, that's what I was raised in and whether I like it or not. That's
yeah.
definitely, I think I'm probably realizing this right now on your podcast, Jen. That's probably where I'm most comfortable in the suburbs or the country. I think I'm not a city guy at all. And
yeah.
So,
well, I know that you don't like anybody who's not white. So that's,
well, that's the,
really,
that's the main
what you worry
reason.
About.
Yeah.
You worry that when you say that, someone will make the assumption that that means you're not comfortable
absolutely.
With any sort of like ethnic diversity. I would be, I feel like I've lived in suburbs that were non-white, but they were still outside of the sort of hustle and bustle, you
yeah.
know? And I think it's that, it's the pace and the sort of community of it that is more appealing than any sort of
I
like racial fear.
A racial joke for that I was racist.
I was making a racial joke that you were racist.
Yeah, okay, that's what I thought. Well, let's
I don't
get
know how you could have taken it any other way other than that you thought it was 100% serious.
But your explanation of it at the end got so serious that I thought, wait, did I mishear that? And because I thought it was a joke at first, but then I heard you explain it and I started to believe it. And now I'm racist. Oh
yeah.
My God.
That's what I do on this podcast.
Bless you. Whoa. Oh my God.
That was a real sneeze cliche, wasn't it? What do your sneezes sound like? Do they sound like?
I usually, they're kind of like, rah! And then someone will like say, bless you. And then I'll use the second sneeze to say, thank you. Like,
uh-huh.
Thank you. Or something.
That's good. That almost sounds like you could punch through a board at some sort of a karate school or something.
Yeah. I feel like if I'm going to sneeze, I want to feel the full impact.
Yeah.
I like sneezing. I like, it feels like you're like rebooting your hard drive or something, and I want to feel it in my whole body or something. I don't
know. Do you sneeze multiple times, or do you just sneeze?
I'm a two
sneezer,
I think. Yeah.
Who is it? Someone in our sort of thrilling adventure
that
world
familiar.
Has in a series
one of, those
of intense.
30 sneezers.
Yeah, it might be like Dinerstein or someone.
That
I just remember.
Right.
I remember even possibly talking about it on some podcast or other where we had to walk when we were in New Zealand. We had to walk from one terminal to the other outside,
uh-huh.
super like that hangover of jet lag
oh,
where
yeah.
you everything's sort of surreal.
Oof.
And someone had a sneeze attack, and it was. It became like those jokes on like Family Guy or The Simpsons where it's, it goes on for so long, it stops being funny and it's
yeah.
just annoying, and then it goes and then it starts becoming funny again. It took such a long time, the sneezing attack, that we went through like all the emotions. We had all the responses to it. It was crazy. Medical
was.
Concern.
Yeah, sure.
Feeling like someone was like yelling something, but it was really just sneezes.
You're trapped in another hemisphere. How is this going to happen?
Yeah.
Like, how is this going to play out?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It was very dramatic. I can't remember who it is.
Sounds
my,
like Dinerstein.
My gut was Dinerstein, so that makes me think that probably it is.
Could be.
I feel like if it was like Blacker, I would remember
yeah.
very specifically being like, well, he's usually so quiet. What is happening right now with this crazy explosion? That's not untrue of Dinerstein either. But okay, so this sort of expression of... I mean, I feel like we would have been friends. I
yeah.
don't know. I feel like,
no
you
doubt.
Know,
no
that,
doubt.
That that's probably something that could have happened.
Oh, I think especially knowing what I know of you now in high school too, I think we would have been very similar types where we were probably pretty fun loving, but didn't assume we belonged in any particular social class or anything like that, but would do some weird things.
Yeah.
That sounds right.
Which I guess I sort of still feel like.
That's good. You keep that. I've lost it.
Have you? Well, I don't know that I feel like I'm the fun-loving, crazy, wild person since I love being at home also.
Oh, yeah.
Love it.
Well, maybe that's more what I am. Because I do like doing weird things a lot.
Yeah.
But I love
I mean, even just what you're doing. But and isn't also some of it that, I mean, those outlets now are like weirdly part of your profession. So
I guess that's true. That's, I think that
you're
going to
go, you're constantly doing stuff. Like you do so many different things. They're just things that other people know about as entertainment.
But I think that
on the grand scale, like this classroom is life.
Right.
You're still the class clown.
It almost entirely comprises my social life though, with the occasional party here and there, like, but it's hard for me to get out otherwise because I am such a homebody.
That is the best thing about having a podcast or doing shows or something. Yeah. Because if you find a group of people or multiple groups of people that you like to be around and you're not necessarily a socially motivated person, like someone like Acker is great at just going to everything.
He just does.
He gets there. He sees it. He loves it. He's there because he wants to be there.
Right.
And then I would say he is the exception to the rule. And most people, in our world are more like, you know, when we did this fake TED Talks thing at Sketchfest, somehow, I think it was Adam Savage's talk, somewhere in there he mentioned that, like, you know, the sort of understood thing now that the only thing that feels as good as having a plan to do something really fun with people you care about is having that plan fall through or canceling that plan.
God, it's the best.
Where you feel like you've been given this free pass. And it has zero bearing on how you feel about the people. It's they're totally not connected at all.
Completely.
It's just a feeling almost of like school got canceled, but I love school, so I don't know why I am okay with not going.
I know. And even the best project, if it's canceled, is still like, all right.
Yeah.
Because now your slate is free. It's like I love calling in sick to work. Yeah. There's nothing better than a day off when you expected to be at work. It's great.
It's similar to the feeling of you think that you lost your wallet for a second and suddenly your entire world is shattered.
Uh-huh.
And then when you find your wallet, your life is the best it's ever been.
It's a grown-up snow day.
It's a grown-up snow day.
Yeah,
absolutely. Great. And again, that is feels a kind of a disgusting thing to say and feel, given that I fully acknowledge that I get to do what I love for a living.
Exactly. Yeah.
So
it's,
why
it's
would
not
that?
An ungrateful
yeah. Why would that feeling? It does. That seems very ungrateful to go, oh, thank God I don't have to go do that show that other people would die to be in.
I know.
That's terrible. I should never have admitted it.
Well, you have pure sympathy here. I mean, I'm exactly the same way, and I bet most people are, honestly.
Do you feel like some of that has to do with, I mean, I think there are a couple of things that keep people from maybe having that same experience where it's okay to not do something as it is okay to do something. Because I think that, like, the argument that we made by peripheral people in my life would say, okay, so that thing, you didn't go to that thing and you had a great night and you didn't regret it. But if you had gone, you also know that you would have had a great time and you would have been glad you went. And so there's this sort of like leveling thing that happens with that where but if you're a person who has fear of missing out, then you'll just go because it won't be comfortable for you not to go, which I totally understand and respect and kind of wish I had more of because frankly, it'd probably be good for me to do more.
I don't possess amounts of that.
Yeah. And then the other one is just a general sense of regret. Like, oh, am I going to regret one way or the other? But I don't feel like if you're not a super regretful person, if you're just going to be sort of peaceful about whatever decision you make moving forward, then there extra is no reason.
Yeah. I'm that way. I don't carry many regrets about that sort of thing, nor am I the type of person that I feel like I sometimes should have this feeling of, oh, I've been invited to this or doing this show and this list of people will be there. I should make every effort to, but I just, I think sometimes, I don't know, maybe I have some social anxiety too. I think that's part of it too.
I think I do too. That's why I respond so much better to game night scenarios
Same
or something
here,
like that, where it feels like the expectation is not that I'm just going to go to a bar and drink and run out of things to say or something.
Right.
That if I, there's some sort of organization that it feels like.
A bar especially is I'm basically, unless I have to be there, won't be there. A dark, loud bar where you can't see or hear anybody and you're chatting with people you barely know, trying to make small talk that you can't even get from one mouth to another ear because of the noise. I've never been able to wrap my head around that. Even back in the day when I should have loved that in college, I hated it. So I would love to say it's an age thing, but I just can't,
I think I embrace your sound logic. I embrace your sound logic. And but and then my friends who love doing that, there's nothing about it that's described. Do I just roll my eyes at? I'm like, oh my gosh, I wish I saw. I guess if I see that you have this relationship to that, and I would love to also have that, but I don't. So I'm sort of envious of it, but I also am not spending too much time trying to cultivate that or caring that much. I'm sure someone who hates doing game nights would be like, ugh,
now I can't
why
imagine
do you need
anybody
structure? Why do you need structure to your social? And like, that sounds like work to me. How dare you? You can't just relax and just chit chat. You have to still use your brain and be challenged by puzzles.
I like anything if it's a small group in a well-lit house.
Yeah. I know you don't want to be dark. I know you don't want the best toys to be almost inaccessible. Nice. It's a nice, safe, clean environment.
I think the thing, maybe you feel this too, is that compounds it is I've always possessed this, not this, I don't have a love to go out unless it's like the right circumstances. But then once you get like a home life that you are happy with and content, that does double time to make you not want to do it
because
you're going, wait, do this thing that I don't really love doing.
Yeah.
And I could stay home and just, you know, be in this comfortable place, this world you've created.
Yeah.
You know, because I work hard to try to create, I probably work too hard to create a comfortable home life, both relationship, personal wise, and just the surroundings. It's something that means the most to me. And I think it inhibits me going out sometimes. I create too warm a nest that I don't want to leave it. It's too comfortable.
Could not relate.
I agree though. I see your home and I would think like if I lived here, it would be really hard to go out. It's not just how it's a really nice place, but it's just very comfortable. It's personal to you. I could see where this is a major safe place. And that's what our house is too. And it's
totally
like,
is.
I'm clearly building like a comfort fortress. That
this is
in
our
some
fort.
Ways,
this is a wonderful cushiony fort.
Yeah.
It's not particularly intimidating on the inside or outside for the fort that it is, but it's definitely a place where, I mean, is that, do you feel like you have tender feelings about work? Because I know that for me, there is this sort of sense of like, I don't know what I think I'm protecting myself from because I've been very lucky, but any sort of a bad stinging feeling, I still like, I smart, you know, I don't, I'm not this person who's like, listen, the whole world can hate me and I don't give a shit.
No,
and so I wonder if part of that is the sort of like, this is this bubble where, you know, I can kind
that's
of
a good question.
Recover from that or, you know, feel like that's not going to get me. I don't know. I mean, I don't feel I'm that scared of a person, but I do know that like, you know, if I go out and pitch something and three people in a row say no, it feels really good to come home
and
be like, look at my great stuff and my great pets. And well, I'm good. I'm fine. I'm going to tool around in the garden.
Yeah.
That's my life doesn't revolve around someone else's rejection of me.
If you know you have that to go back to, it's very comforting.
Yeah.
I'm not someone that, I guess I also struggle with the fact of whether I'm even in this business or not in the first place, because I'm half in and half out. But it on the like quote unquote legitimate side of things, rejections or stings don't bother me because they seem so far away. But I think personal projects, if something like didn't go well with that, it would probably hurt more or something. I don't know. But I think for me, it's more probably anxiety or social anxiety that I do not have day to day. But for some reason, a Friday and a Saturday night having to go out, I just love staying home on a Friday or a Saturday.
Oh my God,
night.
So
I
do
love
I.
It. I
but
love
that's
it.
The other great thing about often what we do is that if you're not showing up at 8 o'clock in the morning to an office every day, that timeline loses
it
meaning
does.
And structure
it
in a
really
way that
does.
You really do start to love. Like, God, I love going to the movies on a Wednesday
because
you know, I know that I'm not going to be surrounded by a bunch of people.
Yeah.
I went to The Cure last night.
Oh, that's
which
right.
Was super fun. Yeah, super, super fun. And, but like, they played like four encores, which April has, she already had looked up the night before me. She's very on top
is
of stuff
April
like that.
Richardson?
April Richardson.
Yeah.
And she definitely was like, dude, I looked up what the set list was last night. Like she's the person who's going, has the enthusiasm to do that. And she was like, I think they played like 3 hours. They played four encores.
Oh, no,
I was like, all right, that's good to know. That's what I have to expect.
Oh, no.
And then, and which was, and they fucking killed it, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Just killed it. Like, I was like, oh, this is rock. Like on some level, I've sort of tucked it into this place where it's like precious to me, and it's this, and it represents this part of my life. And I don't always listen to The Cure at, because it's so connected to a very specific point.
Oh,
it's like an immediate voyage to that place of my, you know, youth. But they just tore it up. I was like, God, they're like rocking right now. This is okay. But somewhere into the third encore, when everyone was still there, but like every once in a while, someone would sort of creep away. Yeah. I turned to her and said, okay, I just need a voice that I have just hit the part of the night where I realize what leaving is going to be like. Yeah. And I'm dreading it.
Oh.
Because that feeling afterwards, like of just sort of being sandwiched between people and like shuffling and feeling like there's no way past this, but to just stay in this horde until a certain point where you can breathe again is one of my least favorite feelings
really?
In the world.
Oh,
it's just awful.
So it's actually like a physical thing for you in some sense. Yeah.
It's claustrophobic.
I get more of a social mental thing. That's funny.
But there's also just, yeah, just the hum of people and activity and this and that. It just, it becomes like overstimulating, which is weird because here you're sitting in the seat with lights and music blaring at you. That should be hyper-stimulating. But instead, it's just the quiet, like, oh my God, me too! And like a drunk person stumbles into you that I'm like, I can't do this right now.
I definitely see what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's funny because even the best concert in the world is always, I don't know, a third too long for me.
Like, yeah.
I'm always just...
I thought I would feel that way last night. I think somehow being with somebody who is so enthusiastic about it, and I had taken her for as a late birthday present. I had bought the tickets and sort of splurged on, like, you know, really good seats in a little box. And because I knew if they, like, when you have that friend who's just, the enthusiasm is there, you're like, oh, this is going to be money well spent, just for the experience of, like, I knew she was going to totally appreciate it and be very vocal about it. This is a very selfish choice on my part, because she was like, this is awesome.
Where was the concert?
It was at the Hollywood Bowl.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was great.
Wow.
Oh, it was great.
Must have been amazing.
It's such a magical place to see stuff. Yeah. And so so that sort of carried me through. It was like, oh, I can't be this person that's like, maybe we can just slip out. Like, you can't take someone as a gift and then be like, listen, why don't we go ahead and just get out of here
right
now?
I know.
And so it wasn't even like, I didn't feel like I was making a concession as it was happening. I honestly was like, I'm okay with this until that moment. And then she said, well, we can just sit here and wait till most of it clears. And I thought, oh, that's the difference between us. I'm a sneak out early and she's a, I will stay till the bitter end. And even if I want to avoid that crowd, the answer is to just stay and hang out a little longer.
So what'd you guys do?
We stayed.
That's probably a good
solution. Waited. We waited till emptied out, and it was still awful. But it's not like she was like, "This is great," you know. It's not like she was like, "I love surfing through the crowd like this," you know. Of course, she was like, "Yeah, this is awful, but it's totally worth it." But it's definitely it was a real sea of people, and that is the kind of thing that if I don't have someone right next to me going, God, let's do it anyway. Mm-hmm. That could have, like, having the accurate memory of those moments sometimes overshadow whatever the positive experience is in between. And that of itself would be enough for me to be like, I don't have to go see him.
Yeah.
Like, I'll just stay home and listen to him. I won't have to deal with that throng at the end.
Right,
but Janet, what about the 3 hours in between where you're just having a great time?
Like, no recollection.
Yeah, I know, but you know what I mean? So it's good to have somebody who's more of the, you know, the person who's like, no, we're going to do it. We're going to do it. That's, you know, that's important to them.
Yeah.
And now I'm seeing another show tonight. And
what are you doing
two things in a row is like, it's an unknown quantity for
what
me.
What are you seeing?
Frightened Rabbit.
Who's Frightened? I don't know Frightened Rabbit.
Frightened Rabbit is a Scottish band that I love so much.
Will you be the person there this time going, come on, we can do this, we can do this?
It's hard to say.
Yeah.
Because even being there and knowing it's going to be great, I think the control freak in me is like, I can control my experience all the way up until leaving before the last song. Because I can have all of this and avoid that. I would still potentially be the person that's like, okay, I've seen 79% of this show and now I have the option of leaving before. But it's a small place. It's at the Henry Fonda.
Oh, that's good.
So that's an easy, people like getting out of there is easy.
I have a like fair amount of completist in me. So even though I'm done with the show three quarters in, I'm like, well, I got to see it through to the end. And so I'm just saying I'm like ready to go that last
third. You a person that would then sit in a movie you thought was terrible all the way to the end because you needed to see it through?
Not anymore. And you know what?
Because I love walking out of a
show
movie
that did that I watched all the way through to the end. the famous show that took place on an island. And I thought, I'll stick with
this. I wish that you had given me the option of betting $3,000 on what that show would be.
Would you have gotten it?
Before you even got to the island part.
No offense to anybody that was involved with that. But it was one where I just was ultimately like, that asked a lot of me.
Yeah.
Give me anything. And so I vowed never to do that again. And now I'll bail on shows if they're not working for me. But there was a point, where if I started one, I thought, there must have been a reason I wanted to watch this in the first place.
Yeah.
And I was always like, it's me, not them. It was probably the same thing I was doing with girls in high school. You know? And now I'm ready to just be honest and direct with shows that
this
I watch.
This isn't working. I got to break up with the show. Yeah. I just have to.
That's right.
I really get it. I can't believe I would have long started this MASH game if I weren't paying attention to it.
I know. One second, though, because I think it's led me to stick with things that I would have otherwise bailed on. Like, everybody hated season 2 of True Detective, and for some reason I am the only person in the world that loved that show.
Yeah.
And I was just comfortable enough in my own skin to go, I love this and I'm gonna watch it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why. That's it. That's all I had to say.
No, I appreciate that. I'm glad we got the shout out to True Detective in there. I don't feel like I know what you're talking about in terms of everyone being like, what was that?
Yeah.
That wasn't even the same show. But my relationship to the arc of the first True Detective series was that I was left feeling like, well, there's a lot of great meat in there, but I wouldn't say this was so phenomenal that it couldn't be matched by its second season. Second season was totally different. It was interesting. To me, they're the same. Like, to me, the level of enthusiasm I have for them is not enormous.
Yeah.
But I'm glad I watched them. I thought they were really interesting.
Yeah. To each their own.
To each their own.
Tuning. To each their own tuning.
Teach their own tuning.
TV tuning.
Super, super technology specific. Or tuning. That's like a thing. Oh my God. This is a very obscure reference. I was going to say, what else is tuning? Tuning is like a thing. And it's from the that movie that Rufus Sewell is in, Dark City.
Oh,
did you ever see that?
No. I know the movie, but I've never seen it. Is it Keith R. Sutherland in that
movie? Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a strange movie.
I would see that. Yeah, that looks interesting.
It's the weird men that are all white-faced who wear weird hats.
Yeah.
They do a thing called tuning.
Oh.
That is very weird.
That's definitely what I meant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a very different meaning when you see that movie. You'll be like, is that what I meant? Okay, let's get into this MASH game.
Okay, I'm excited.
Okay, first category is... I'm going to just be relentless and ruthless with you because you're such a great improviser that you'll just come up with stuff that's off the top of your head. These might be the worst categories in the world. Congratulations. Three pranks that you wish you could pull that don't have any real ramifications, but that could be as sort of like... You can interpret prank as large or small as you want. It could be like a giant jewel heist, or it could be just a tiny thing that always makes you laugh that you wouldn't do now because you feel bad.
Okay, I'm just going to go off the top of my head.
Great.
I would love for Amanda to be able to come home one day and I'm just stuck to the ceiling and see how long it takes before she recognizes that.
Okay, great.
Which she won't, because she just... I will set things up as jokes or do something like stare at her for a long time and she just will never see it.
Yeah.
So I would be up on that ceiling. This is a horrible idea because I would be stuck up on that ceiling forever.
Nope. Forever. Not in this world. In this world, it's genius.
Okay.
Great.
What
came up for me, by the way, on this was that I don't think I ever TB'd anyone because I felt so bad because I knew what a pain it was to clean up the next day. But the idea of flinging toilet paper through the trees of someone's house is extremely appealing.
We just got toilet paper.
Did you really?
Yeah. And we do not know who it is. And it wasn't like, oh, I'm angry that we got toilet paper, or I'm, this is great, we got toilet paper. I was right in the middle where I was like sober, just like, oh, I've hit that stage of life where I don't toilet paper anymore. I get toilet paper.
Yeah.
Or I think it was Amanda because it was her birthday that it happened. So, but we don't know who it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
God, you so bastards. So you're too old to toilet paper, but someone adjacent to you may have toilet papered.
Yeah.
Interesting.
But yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
Or is it completely random
and
we just want to feel like things are about us? So you tried to solve the mystery that was unsolvable.
The only clue is that there was a 40 ounce of Miller Lite empty in the lawn. So it was a trucker? I don't know.
Uh-huh. I think that's, I think you can get to the bottom of it. Well, first of all, you didn't have it checked for prints. So you really didn't do your due diligence. Okay. You're stuck to the ceiling. Two more.
That's so stupid.
Okay. I really embrace it.
That I could make, these are all home-based things, such a homebody, that I could make Margot speak English to Amanda.
Great.
And freak her out. All of these are to scare Amanda. This is hilarious.
Perfect.
And then, boy, I'm not a prankster by trade. So, God.
I know. Well, that's because you peaked early.
I know.
Now I'm forcing you to try to revisit your past glories.
I think that Amanda would turn on the TV and I'm just the newscaster. It's all home-based pranks. This is all I can't even think outside of my house anymore.
God, this is so satisfying for that reason, if nothing else. Okay, next category. Next category is you have to live in three places that are not your home, and in fact, they're not anyone else's home.
Oh, this is awful.
It's like you have to live in Vicky's Toys, or you have to live... It's your vacation home is... the punishment that I'm putting on you is that it can't be a house. It has to be some other thing that you would be living in.
Oh, wow.
Anywhere. It could be even a fictitious place from, like, movies.
Okay. I would... But it can't be a house of any kind.
But it can't be a house. Shit. It can be a business. It can be...
Okay. Oh, man. But the Ewok Village doesn't count, right? Because it's a little bunch of little houses.
I'm going to let you do it.
Okay, thanks.
I'm letting you do it because I think after a while, you'd still suffer through Hello, the Doorways Are.
You're right. Okay, wait. I'm going to find a loophole here.
Okay,
it's
all right.
It's a business, but it was a house, but it's no longer a house, and it's a business. The Gamble House in Pasadena.
All right.
Oh, nice.
Clever.
And then, let's say Vicky's Toy Town.
Great. Good old, who was Vicky? Which one of you is Vicky? What if his name was Victor, and he was like, I go by Vicky, I'm not proud of it, but...
Because then he had no right to be so mean.
I know. Yeah. God, I wish I knew what their story was. Haunted. Mm-hmm. Three scary movies in which you can jump into the movie and wield some sort of power that saves the day.
Oh, okay. Well, Halloween, for sure.
Yep.
Aliens.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll go with Friday the 13th, part 4.
Oh my, what's the fourth?
That was the one where there was like a kid, it was Corey Feldman, he was being attacked. I was that age, so I have the most connection to the fear of it.
Yeah.
Plus it's like
one
of the best
ones. Did he
die
or did he live?
No, he shaved
his head. Is
this
like Dream Warriors? That's the third Friday, that's the third Nightmare on Elm Street.
I don't know.
Which is a small obsession of mine.
Really?
Yeah, because that's the one where it's a mental institution.
Oh, right.
And Patricia Arquette's there and like a bunch of other people are there and they all... kind of band together and fight back and use their dreams lucidly to create superpowers for themselves. Now it works out very poorly for all of them except for the one who survives, but so satisfying.
Well, Corey Feldman makes himself up to look like Jason as a kid. So he kind of like, stuns Jason and stops him in his tracks. And it's
that's sort of the game that I always played even as a child in my head, which was like, is there a way to outsmart this evil creature? Like, is there a way to do something besides run away?
Right.
I think is like what I was really, I felt like I needed to solve all the time in my head.
And they do that a few times in that franchise. Like one woman tries to make him think she's his mother.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They do that in Dreamscape too. That's how they defeat the
your franchise,
guy who
really?
Plays Snake Boy. Snake Man. Who was once, I'm sure, a snake boy who needed his mommy, which is what they capitalize on. Next category is three foods, I guess, or drinks that are not great for you to have on a regular basis in this life.
Oh, problem in life
but,
already.
Yeah, but
bean
like,
and cheese burritos.
Bean and cheese, okay, great.
That's my biggest weakness. Cookies.
Particular kind or just?
Just cookies.
You're a cookie lover.
I mean, there are very few cookies I don't like. Of course, I have favorites, but... And then Kraft macaroni and cheese.
Got it. Yep. That just makes good sense.
Yeah.
All right. I got to get this out of the way. All due respect to your beautiful wife.
Sure.
Whom I adore.
Yeah.
three ladies. It could be ladies from fiction, could be a movie character. It doesn't have to be like a celebrity person that in this alternate universe you have maybe some sexy times with, or right. sort of this alternate universe partner.
Well, this is fair because this came up at her birthday celebration recently, where all the people had to go around and say they had their two celebrity crushes. So,
oh, okay.
So this is already
and
out.
And she's done my podcast, which means
that's
that
right.
she covered
yeah,
this.
Yeah, that's right. She did this. She betrayed me
first. I'm trying
first.
To remember who they were.
I am too. Because I think I listened and I'm trying to remember who she said. If I know her, though, it would be... Who is her guy? Oh, Channing Tatum is one of them.
Mm-hmm. Was he on, I guess he maybe was on there. I can't
yeah.
remember.
All right. So for me, Ava Green...
Oh yeah.
Do How
you
many
watch
do I get
Penny Dreadful?
No, I want to.
You
I'm
get three.
Saving it up.
That movie, that show, which is more like a movie, no one else could have done what she's doing.
Really?
No one else could have done what she's doing. It's like it was made for her. She's and also amazing. Just seems exhausting. Like yeah. she should win an Academy Award for that television show. She's working real hard.
I'll have to check it out.
She's very great. Yeah.
All right. Audrey Tautou.
Great.
I always struggle with a third one.
So those were the two that you said?
Well, I said we all did a third, mm-hmm. and I did a third one that really upset her.
Oh, okay. All right.
Not really, but...
Yeah.
So I'm debating whether I should say that. She's just like, why her? Why? Like, I understand these two other amazing...
Well, now
women.
We all have to know.
Right.
That's
Michelle Williams. That for some reason, that really
oh,
bummed her out.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Why?
Interesting. Well, she's a little more sort of... Yeah, I don't know. Well, she's like an American little sort of pixie blonde.
Yeah. I don't know why that was so funny. And we just all laughed so hard that was the one that stuck in her craw.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I kind of makes sense to me because I feel like if my partner named three people and two of them are wildly different from me and the last one was like not even close to me, but just like closer than yeah. the other two. Because if
that
you just kept
it.
Going down the line and you were like, and Angelina Jolie, it would be like, yeah. oh, okay, this is all just a bunch of mystery girls
sure,
who are
yeah.
all like sort of weirdly ethereal in their own weird way kind of thing.
That may have been it because I think she said something like, well, but I mean, I'm basically that. And I was like, yes, but this isn't I'm choosing her over you. This is we were supposed to name three celebrities.
That can't yeah. be the person that you're currently yeah, yeah with.
And I think it was someone brought up. Her name and I went, oh yeah, I like her and
yeah,
but
yeah,
boy
yeah.
then it I caught
what
hell.
About someone who's yeah the Audrey Tautou ones. What about do you ever have crushes on someone from like older movies
yeah,
like
I definitely do there's this actress from the Marx Brothers film Animal Crackers named Lillian Roth that
oh I love
you can
it.
Put her down if you want
I
for
love
the
it.
Third and then who else like
you know that classic. You've already named three
I know Audrey Hepburn
You just keep naming
Sorry.
Women. Amanda, it was weird. The last six categories were all women. I don't know. It just, he couldn't be stopped. Most of these women are rotting in their graves, by the way. Yeah, she's amazing.
I'll put Lillian Roth as my third,
okay.
my official third.
Okay, great. Okay, next category is three. Let's do three. I guess I sort of did a movie thing that you could jump into. Let's do three. Three firsts, three things that you wish you could do again for the first time, either because it was so awesome the first time that
you would wish to relive
that adrenaline or whatever, or a thing that you're like, yeah, you know what? I would rather my first time at this be slightly better or different.
Let me lie on the couch for
you.
Yeah,
there it is, doctor.
Yeah.
Wait, why am I calling you doctor?
Okay. First. Oh, boy. Okay. Okay. Huh. Man. This is tough. Let me think good first.
Like, I almost feel like I wish I could see Dead Poets Society for the first time, but it would involve
yeah.
time traveling. Like,
yeah.
I wouldn't want to be this person seeing it for the first time. I just want to relive exactly the experience that
okay,
I had
yeah.
as a young person. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, it could be that kind of thing.
Maybe, yeah, because that... I saw Star Wars in the theater, but I don't remember the experience. But I remember, for some reason, seeing Die Hard at home on VHS for the first time and just being blown away.
Yeah.
I'll take that
okay,
one.
Okay, great.
Bad. Be so bad I wanted to. I think the first two major breakups I had, I would want to do again. A, to get it done with quicker for
mm-hmm.
both people's sakes,
mm-hmm.
but also just to do it better mm-hmm. and more respectably, I
mm-hmm.
guess.
Yeah,
yeah,
totally.
Yeah,
I think a lot
that.
Of us have those.
Yeah.
Does that mean that I'm putting each one of those breakups as the tier.
Can we just do a general breakup category?
Yeah, I did. Okay. That's what I was imagining.
Okay. And then I know there's something else if I had to do all over again. Oh, I would have been a better big brother to my brother, Carrie.
Oh, that's very noble. Do-over. That's very sweet. But seriously, I kind of hope we get Die Hard. Listen, all due respect to this. Okay, next category is, let's say you have a very special guest on Super Ego who, for one reason or another, you 100% know will never happen. So it could be someone who's not alive anymore. It could be someone who doesn't speak English. It could be somebody who is so far from show business that they would never be on the show, but three kind of fantasy guest stars.
Three. Okay, so Meryl Streep.
Great. See, to me, I want to make that happen.
That would be unbelievable. Gene Wilder.
Yeah.
And then I guess maybe Amy Sedaris.
Great. Great, 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 great. I mean,
David Sedaris listens to Super Ego. You'd think that could happen.
Maybe it will.
I don't know.
Maybe it will. David, could you come in here, please?
Yes.
I keep him in a little closet. It's wonderful. But not the kind of closet you might be thinking. Okay. And then final category. Oh, Matt, final category. A lot of pressure on me. Let's do three dream job kind of things, like alternate universe. Okay. All this still exists, but in this alternate universe, you have these three other possibilities for careers. As far-fetched as you want.
I got them. Architect.
Great.
Musician or singer-songwriter. Mm-hmm. And physicist.
Ooh.
Or.
What do you think that you would be doing as a physicist? That would be exciting.
Not the math side of thing, but like maybe like a
like a Neil deGrasse Tyson kind of
like that, something fun, or like a astrobiologist or something. Like, I'm fascinated by the organisms that could be living out in
whatever. Yeah, I'll jump on that bandwagon. It's probably a pretty small bandwagon. Okay, tell me when to stop. I was trying to create shapes that wouldn't be easily identifiable, as if I think someone's going to cheat. I'm going to pause this. I want to reassure you that to the listener, it will seem as if no time has passed.
I am excited.
Okay. I will come back with your 100% guaranteed MASH future. I promise not to give you any sort of prognosis that involves lumps, growths, maybe personal growth.
Okay, I'll take it.
Maybe. I said maybe.
Okay.
Now, I'm very, very pleased with your results.
Oh, good.
With your test results. You have anemia.
Shit.
No. Okay. First of all, I want to congratulate you on... listen, here's what's going to happen. In a day not too far from today, Amanda is going to come home.
Please let me be stuck to the ceiling.
You are not on the ceiling.
Damn, okay.
You might not even be there. But you know what? She's not going to be lonely, because Margaret's going to open up her little cat mouth and start speaking English.
Okay, good.
So that's what's going to happen. Now, I don't know where you are at this point. Are you off discovering life on other planets and analyzing it and discussing it and bringing it to the world as the physicist that you are?
Oh my God, that's exciting.
Quite possibly.
Okay.
Are you off being a better big brother to Carrie?
Uh-huh.
Could be.
That's nice.
Giving him all the mac and cheese he can eat. That's what you have access to 24/7 at no detriment to your health whatsoever.
Okay.
Possibly. Are you battling Jason in Friday the 13th, part 4? Which I had written down as Friday the 4th, and I was like, Friday the 4th? That doesn't seem like a scary day at all. Friday the 13th, part 4. Are you at your vacation home in Vicky's Toy Store?
Oh, my God. What's more harrowing, Jason or Vicky's Toy Store?
I mean...
It's actually Vicky's Toy Town.
Vicky's Toy Town. I apologize.
That's hilarious.
To you and
how would you have known that? But I had to remind myself.
No, I did know that. You definitely said more than once that it was Vicky's Toy Town.
It's
a whole town
of
toys.
I know.
That's the most insulting part. It's not a town. There are aisles.
Those are the streets.
Or are you... Oh, by the way, the mansion, apartment, shack, house is... you obviously still have a dwelling. So I'm going to say that your house is just a tiny dollhouse inside of Vicky's toy town.
Okay.
And or are you living in your alternate universe with Eva Green? That's a win.
That would be my number one.
That's a win.
Next to Amanda.
Yeah, I mean, this is just...
And Margo. She's my number two. Even she wouldn't like that.
I don't like that. Very naggy sound I made. And then this is the thing that, you know, listen, this could be in the imminent future. The imminent future. He's still alive. He may be a guest on your podcast. And his name is Gene Wilder.
Oh, my God. God,
that would be amazing.
Yeah. He doesn't even do movies anymore.
I know. But yeah, well, Super Freak is not a movie.
I bet you WTF has probably reached out to him at this point.
I'm guessing they definitely have.
If they can't get him. They got Obama. If they can't get Gene Wilder, we're not gonna.
You never know. You never know.
You're right.
I'll see what I can do.
Please.
I'm devoting my life to it.
Thank you.
Matt, thank you so much for doing the podcast.
Janet,
what a
I'm
blast.
So excited to be a boy of summer.
Oh my, oh, thank you for reminding me. As a boy of summer, you are legally required to sing whatever snippet of Don Henley's Boys of Summer that you can think of off the top of your head.
I'm trying to think of the verses.
I've frozen you in terror.
Okay.
Yeah, it's coming. I can see it.
I don't know that. Because this song came out in a phase where I would have just put my own lyrics to everything. So it's going
to
be like...
I want to welcome you to do that
this
today.
This is where all the ball caps go after the boys of summer have gone. I can't even remember the tune now. This is...
This is where all the ball caps go. First of all, I know you said ball caps, but in my mind you said bald caps.
After the boys of summer have gone.
You're doing it. After the boys of summer have gone.
This is why I don't do karaoke, because I can sing my own songs, but I can rarely ever sing another person's song. Oh my God, I was just doing this with Amanda the other day where we were singing All Time High. Do you know that song by Rita Coolidge? Like, we're in all time high.
Oh, yeah, because that was in Octopussy.
Octopussy, that's right. So yeah. That's why it came up.
I've seen that a million times. Oh, it was always
on cable.
Cable.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I love when she like tries. It was a sweet distraction for an hour or two. Had no intention to do the things we've done. See, the Bond songs I can sing because they've been in my life for so long. But she does this thing where she can't remember lyrics but doesn't stop anyway. And so it's like, what comes after that line? She goes, we're an all-time high. Can't take my hotel away.
That's very satisfying. Yeah. I can't wait to join this marriage.
Yeah.
Okay. I think you did it. You fulfilled your obligation.
Thank God.
You singing the entire song would have been as good as you saying that this is where all the ball caps go.
Change it, Henley.
Guys, I've talked about Super Ego, but what are some other things that people? Because again, you do a million things that you would want to tell anyone
God,
about.
I have a podcast called I Was There Too, where I talk to people who had like small but significant roles in big movies, so they can kind of give a different
perspective. I'm really looking forward to talking about Catwoman with you.
Oh, I know. That's right. We're going to do that. Yeah, that's exciting. There's a thing that Mark McConville and I do called Pistol Shrimps Radio, which is a female basketball rec league that my fiance Amanda plays on, and we do play-by-play commentary on those games, even though we don't know anything about sports.
So amazing.
And that's probably enough.
Those
that's
are great.
Enough,
yeah. And they can find you on Twitter and stuff.
That's right.
At
just my name. Yeah. At Matt Gorley.
Do not go to at my name, guys. Do not go to at my name. I can't be any more clear on that. Matt Gorley, thank you so much.
Thank you, Janet.
Happy summer, everybody. Bye. As always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
Now leaving Nerdist.com.